Welcome back to another episode of Shiro's Unlimited Behind the Book. I'm Janie Morris, founder and chief experience officer at Boomer Babes Life, our global community for women over 50, and I'm delighted to have your company back once again. Thank you so much, by the way, everyone. We're getting lots of messages and lots of emails and lots of texts saying that you're loving these in-depth behind the book interviews that we're doing with these amazing authors, each and every one of them an amazing woman over 50 that has created an absolute gift in their writing. And today is absolutely no exception. Now, if you have already got your latest issue, that's the October 2020 issue of Boomer Babes Life magazine, you would have read the fabulous interview there by our chief, our editor-in-chief, Astra Dadzis, with the amazing Jacqueline Kent. And the interview was all about her book, Vida. Now, this is what we're going to be talking about today. It's my absolute pleasure and honor to introduce you to Jacqueline. Jacqueline is an Australian author. She's a journalist, a biographer, a non-fiction writer, I must say. Let's clarify that as well. She lives in beautiful Sydney that is enjoying some amazing spring weather right now. She's an incredibly accomplished woman, and we are very, very honoured to have her with us today. Jacqueline, welcome to Shiro's Unlimited Behind the Book.
Thanks, Janie.
Great to have you here. Now, before we get into this incredible book that you've written, I do want to just ask you a few quick personal questions. Now, my research shows me that you were born in Sydney, but you did decide to move over to Adelaide in South Australia for a period of time. Now, why didn't you stay?
Well, it's actually not my decision. I think I was about 11. And my father came over, my family came over, my father got a job over in Adelaide with Pope Products of Blessed Memory many years ago. And so we stayed here, and I went to Saints Girls School, and I went to university in Adelaide, which I hugely enjoyed. But then I wanted to be a journalist, and, you know, greener pastures, bigger city. So I moved back to Sydney when I was about 19, I think, 19 or 20. And I've kind of been here ever since, although I've been to Adelaide a few times. That's all, yeah.
Oh, well, in that case, we forgive you, because your whole career took off once you left. we set you up for it.
Yeah, there's seed time, and I have enormously fond memories, particularly of university life at the University of Adelaide, which was and is a really beautiful university. So yeah.
So when you went back to Sydney then, and you got into what was then to become your career, which was writing and journalism, where did you first start out then back in Sydney, Jacqueline?
I started out as a typist with a brand new, well-minted arts degree. I started out as a typist at a TV magazine called TV Times. And I stayed there for a bit. I got a cadetship after a little while. And then I became like an accredited journalist. And then I thought, so I moved into ABC Radio and became a radio producer, mostly for the children's department in radio. And then after a few years, you know, itchy feet, I did the London thing and went overseas and worked and starved, and it was all terribly romantic, as it usually is if you've never actually tried it. And so I did that for a while, and then I came back to Sydney and I started work as a book editor, which is what I've been doing most of the time, really. And then I started writing, and so they've been kind of going in tandem ever since. Not much bit of journalism, but only bits and pieces. That's mostly been book editing and writing books, really. That's been basically what I've been doing for the last, I don't know, however long, quite a while.
with your beginnings in as an actual author, then focusing all of your energies into that. Now, you didn't start out in non-fiction, did you? You actually started out in fiction. How did that come about? What was the inspiration for that?
I started off with writing because I was a radio person. I started because I'd been working in radio. I did a book which was a history of Australian radio, which was based on the names that people of the 50s and 60s knew in radio. And then I did a book about childhood. Then I did some young adult fiction. But since the late 90s anyway, I've been concentrating on biography. And this one, Vida, is my fourth or fifth, I think, major big biography. Yep.
Well, let's talk about Vida. So you and I had a bit of a chat before we started our interview today, and I'm going to repeat what I said to you, is that, first of all, congratulations and thank you for writing this book. And for our audience, if you haven't already got your copy of Vida, go to our website in the shop section. You can order this copy straight away. And once you've listened to what Jacqueline's about to say to you about this, I know you're going to want to get it. The reason, number one reason I want to thank you for writing this is because I'm only halfway through it. And it's going to be the first book that I've been asked to review to read all the way through because the story behind the woman is one of the most powerful stories that I've read ever. Also, the fact that her story, which is so much about empowering and standing up for and elevating women in society, is still not where it should be 100 years later.
No.
Am I correct in that overall assessment of what you've written?
It's one of the things that I found really surprising when I started research, because Vida Goldstein was the first woman to put her hand up to stand for federal parliament in Victoria for the Senate in 1903, it was the first election that women were able to vote, first time they were able to vote. And she wasn't the only woman who stood. I think there were three others, but she's the first one. So she gets the Guernsey as the first. What really surprised me was this, that women got the vote in 1902. They were able to be part of an election in 1903. The first woman in Australian federal parliament did not actually take her seat for 40 years. That is what really surprised me, because even though the US and the UK were much later in giving their women, or white women citizens, the vote, they didn't do it till about 1920. They had women in Congress and British Parliament within 5 years. It took us 40 years. And I was interested to know why, and that's one of the themes of the book, why it just took us so long for women to take their place in Parliament, and all the things that flow from that. So yeah, so as well as telling the story of Vida, who, by the way, made 5 attempts to get into Parliament and didn't make it any time. She really tried, but she didn't make it. The last 2 times, however, she was during World War One, when, you know, everyone was, and she went on a pacifist platform, so everybody was mad keen on the war except her. So it's not too surprising that she didn't make it those last 2 times. But she really, really tried. And the interesting thing is that the obstacles she had to confront hadn't changed an awful lot in 110 years, when between her really and Julia Gillard.
And exactly, that was one of the things that I was going to ask you. When you, you've actually written 2 biographies with Julia Gillard, am I correct?
Yes. Well, yeah. Well, kind of, yes. One's a biography of her life up to her becoming Prime Minister. Mm. And the second one is about her time as a Prime Minister. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So when you were doing your research and writing this book on Vida, did you find the conversations that you had with Julia? Because to me, what Julia Gillard went through in her political career, as I read through this book, they drew a lot of parallels of going all the way back there. Did you find that you were able to pull from that into what you were setting up with this book?
Pretty much. It was kind of, I have to tell you that quite a lot of the time I was researching and writing this book, I was in a state of low-level fury because it just seemed so awful that nothing had changed, that there was still misogyny, there were still men writing articles about women and not talking about what they believed or what they'd said, but what they were wearing and their hairstyles. Vida had a fair bit of that. And also the things that they did, the thing that really struck me too was Vida was terrified that her opponents, we were most, not always men, some women as well, and that's Gillard's experience as well. Most of her opponents would set rats or mice onto a platform where she was speaking. And you can just imagine long skirts. It would not have been, you know, pretty awful for that to happen. And I thought, ditch the witch placards that Gillard had, you know, people standing in front of placards. It's a very, very similar mindset, really. Mm.
And it's interesting with that point that you bring up there in regards to even some women along the path, again, drawing back to Julia Gillard as well. Mm. It's not always, well, primarily when you read these stories, and we as women actually know, and we need to more acknowledge this as well, that with all due respect to guys, they do continue this behaviour with women. And however, women themselves quite often fail to support and encourage and celebrate the achievements of women. And in reading this book, I see that was even occurring back then.
Very much so. Actually, to be perfectly honest with you, I think that's a double-edged sword, because you have women who won't support other women, but then you have women who support other women regardless, just because they are women. And that is, to my mind, not awfully helpful either, because what that gets is, oh, you're only saying that because she's a woman. No, you're saying it because she did something dumb. I mean, you yeah. know, there's, you've got to, there is a bit of a balancing act going on here, I think. And I've always thought so. I mean, it's misogyny will take you quite a long way, but it's not the whole story.
Yeah, exactly. Now, one of the things that Vida did in her career as a politician, as a women's advocate for women, was that she started a newspaper called Sphere. And I found it particularly interesting. And again, I'm going to draw back on our off interview conversation. One of the things for us at Boomer Babes Life that we've been taking from this, from the book, is that I just had a little glitch there in my tech, so I'm sorry for the audience. That wasn't yours, that was me. What I was saying was that one of the things that we at Boomer Babes Life have actually taken from her story as well is that from this paper that she started called Sphere, she was very...
The Australian Women's Sphere, actually. Yeah. Sorry? It was called the Australian Women's Sphere. Oh. And it was one of two. She started two, actually, one called The Woman Voter, which was a little later. But, yeah, she started two newspapers, actually.
Yes. Yeah. And, well, one of the things that you wrote about in the book was that she was very specific that in the content there was none of the fashion and cooking and those sort of ideas. It was all very educational, informational and topical for women in regards to community issues. And that's been a turning point for us at Boomer Babes Life. Because of your book. So again, thank you for writing that. How she came up with a lot of obstacles when she did that. How did you find it when you were researching that she stayed the course with all of that?
I have to say I found it extremely refreshing, because in both those newspapers, which she started off her own bat, they both were they're educational, as you said, but what the aim was to teach women what their vote could mean. And she was never somebody who thought, you know, women's voting would necessarily make a huge difference to the body politic or to the politics of Australia. Her whole position about women being given the vote and using that vote was basically it was a badge of citizenship, and women were equal citizens, therefore they should have equal voting rights. That was the first thing. And the second thing was that women needed to be in parliament wherever they could, because men did not have a clue about things that women and children cared about. And it was up to women, again, to educate them. So they were two of the pillars of both those newspapers. She, it does sound rather grim and earnest. It wasn't. She actually she had a couple of sort of short stories and short poems and bits and pieces, but it was primary. But as you say, there were no recipes. There were no hints for the busy housewife. There was none of that stuff. She relented a little bit later, but really, no. That was never the purpose of it. In fact, it was like any magazine that's been published, it was more like Ms. Magazine in its early days in New York when people, including Anne Summers, were involved with it. Yeah.
When one of the parts of the book is specifically speaks to when she then went overseas and her role that she played on the world stage in regards to being an advocate for women. Can you tell us a little bit about that from the book?
Oh, yes. I was really pleased to discover that. She was invited at the beginning of 1903. She was invited to go to America as a representative of Australia where women vote, which is what they said. And she was known as Little Australia, which is quite sweet. And she actually met President Theodore Roosevelt, who said, oh, yes, Australia, lovely young country. You see, because Australia at the time, just at that cusp of the 20th century, was a place where great strides were being made about, you know, working men's working conditions and wages and women. And there was a really great feeling that this was a new country, we could do what we wanted, and this was a really good thing. And she went, she sort of crested that wave, went to America for 5 months and talked to a large group of American women, came back feeling really impressed about, as you are when you go there, about the sheer energy of the place and the sheer energy of the women who were there. And she came back feeling a bit, come on, we've got to do some more. So it really gave her a shot in the arm. It really did. That was the first one. And then later on, she went over to England in about 8 years later to support the suffragettes, who were actually, they were actually basically urban guerrillas, those suffragettes. It was not sort of Glynis Johns in Mary Poppins walking up and down and screaming votes for women. They destroyed property. They were hurled into prison. They were force fed. And it was pretty tough. The police were pretty tough on those women. And she was absolutely horrified. And having been somebody who thought that, you know, it was all right and they would get it eventually, she realised the forces against the suffragettes in England, and she came out as a very strong supporter for them. And that's what she remained up until World War I. And then she stopped supporting them so much because Mrs. Pankhurst, who was the leader of the suffragettes, and some of her friends decided that they were going to support the war effort and, you know, cut down on their votes for women campaigns, which Vida thought was outrageous because she was a pacifist. She couldn't see why those two things couldn't be worked on together, why couldn't still be a pacifist and work for women. And I think she was right, actually, but, you know, there was all that sort of patriotism, my country right or wrong, which you forget the strength of when there's a war on.
It's very powerful. It is very powerful. What do you think that Vida would think today, Jacqueline? We as women always have the conversations about we need to step up. We need to take our seat at the table. we need to be, you know, and then you have on the same level, you have the conversations and the articles being written about the fact that the number of women on boards has dropped, the number of women in senior positions, and it's, and most definitely in politics.
Yeah. It's actually, yeah, I can't remember what the figure is. I think it's something like 37% of the MPs in both houses, I think it's 37, are women in Australia, which is not fantastic considering that, you know, we hold up half the sky. Mm. I really think that that is really a problem for us. And I think partly it's because it's that whole thing about women can have it all. You can't bring up kids properly. You can't have a full-time job. But the most amazing thing would be, and Anthony Albanese said it this very week, absolutely having childcare mandatory. That would do so much for getting women into the workforce. It really would. Because women, we all know, we're torn. Women are torn between, you know, and it's not just having to look after kids. You don't want to miss out on them. You know, you really don't. You know, you ought to miss when they're in interesting stages and doing things. And that childcare thing, which has never been mandated properly in this country, it is in Scandinavia. And look what's happened to them. They're fantastic. They've really got women doing wonderful things. So that would be the first thing. And on the other hand, I'm just thinking the other day that 10 or 15 years ago, we didn't have a Malala. And we didn't have, Greta Thunberg. You fearless young women standing up and saying what they believe, education for young women and climate change. And they've been absolutely fearless. And that is something that didn't exist before. And I think it's absolutely terrific.
It's so inspiring. And I would go as far to say that I think that we women over 50 who, so many are, you know, like grandparents or maybe don't have grandchildren but have adopted grandchildren that you pinch from your friends as well. I think that there's an element of many of us think it's too late for us to do something. It's we've done what we've been meant to do, or we wanted to do, or the choices that we've made in our lives. But now we're over 50, we're over 60. It's too late. Yet when we look at the Gretas of the world, we sit there and go, oh my gosh, those girls are so inspiring. Yet we still step back. We don't step forward. And I would go as far to say that if it was Vida, she would be taking a step forward even more. Would you agree?
Well, up to a point. She was 55 when she made her last attempt to about 55. She was in her 50s when she made her last attempt to enter Parliament, which didn't succeed. And she thought, look, I've done this 5 times. And so she looked for another sphere. She started writing about politics, about world politics. And I don't know how widely her work was published, but I've read quite a lot of it. And she was a very astute observer of international trends. She, among not many people, regarded World War I not the war to end all wars, the beginning of, you know, it was going to continue and there would be another war within 20 years, she said. Wasn't she right? Mm-hmm. And so she knew why that was. She was an astute observer of, as I say, international trends. She was also, and this I think has made her be a bit shortchanged, she was also a member of the Christian Science Church. Now that was huge because she was a practitioner. And if you know anything about Christian Science, that's a pretty senior level. So what she did a lot of what you could call pastoral work in Melbourne, but it's not public work. So it wasn't particularly noted. When people, she died in 1949 at the age of 80. During the 30s and 40s, when Victoria had its centenary, she had a few things to say about women and how things are happening. She wrote articles then. She didn't give up. She never gave up. She changed her field of operations. but she never gave up. And honestly, I reckon that if you've got the energy to keep going, there's always something you can do. There's always something you can do for yourself, for your community. And even if nothing else, this is something that as a biographer, I've said many times, everybody ought to write a memoir. It doesn't matter whether you think you're a writer or not. It doesn't matter, because you keep writing a memoir of your life. Give it to your kids, give it to your grandkids, give it to the grandkids you borrowed maybe. Just do it, because your experience is like nobody else's. It may have a lot in common with other people's, but it's unique, and you really need to, you know, put your stamp on the fact that you have done this and you've been around. Vida, I think, would definitely agree with that. She never said it, but I'm sure she would.
That really is great advice, because you're right. Everybody has a story. Everybody has a story, whether, and I think that and once you start writing things down and putting pen to paper, you actually realize that that's a truth.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
indeed. Do you know, before I let you go, I have to ask you, Jacqueline, the in writing this book, what was your biggest takeaway from her life?
I think as I've said before, in fact, and the epilogue actually kind of gives vent, I think is the word, but basically how little things in certain areas have changed for women. Okay, we're more aware now of domestic violence issues, we're more aware of education, we're more aware of giving women more opportunities, but in certain areas, like running companies or running a political party or anything like that, no, we've got a long way to go.
Yeah.
And that really, you know, when I knew that, but I mean, knowing it and seeing it are two different things. But I think, yeah, I think that was the major takeaway.
What one question that I always ask all of our special guests, and I'm going to ask you, you're not escaping it, Jacqueline, is if you had an 8-year-old Jacqueline in front of you right now, what advice would you give her?
I would say keep going, because when I was 8-year-old Jacqueline, I was determined I was going to be a writer. And I would just say keep going, forget all that adolescent nonsense. Don't spend your time worrying about this, falling in love with unsuitable people, doing all those things. Keep writing, and just, you will get there. That's what I wish I had said to myself when I was 8.
Well, you've certainly made up for it. your catalogue is growing all the time. So what's next for you, Jacqueline? What have you got?
You know, I'm looking at a few things, but nothing has really kind of jumped out, but that's okay, it will. That's one of the things you learn in this game. You sort of, you know, you can't force it, something will happen and then you'll know. But also at the moment I'm doing a bit of publicity about Vida, so I'm still kind of in Vida's space at the moment, so it'll be a little while before I escape from that, I think, but something will turn up. Always does.
Well, we're very much looking forward to seeing what does turn up next for you, Jacqueline. But in the meantime, Vida, A Woman for Our Time, it's an incredibly powerful, inspiring book, and Boomer Babes Life myself personally recommend that you have to get this book. This is your must read, and you know, it's every page has something that is going to stir your heart and soul. If you are a woman over 50 reading this book, I can absolutely guarantee by the time you get to the last page, which I've already said I haven't got to yet, but my editor-in-chief has read it and she has told me what to expect at the end, you will just find this an incredibly powerful book for you. The story is incredible. The woman, Vida Goldstein, is incredible. And Jacqueline Kent, you are amazing. Thank you so much for joining us and being a part of our Shiro's Unlimited Behind the Book series.
Thank you, Janie.
And if you've enjoyed listening to this podcast just as much as we've enjoyed bringing it to you, drop us a like, make sure you share and comment below. And if you've got any questions in regards to the book, Vida, a woman for our time. Just pop those comments down below under whatever device you're streaming this podcast from. And check out our socials, boomerbabeslife.com. You can get it all there. Remember, if you want to get this book, you can get it straight away. Just go to boomerbabeslife.com, go to our website, into the shop. It's there. You can order your copy straight away. And check out Boomer Babes Life magazine, the October issue, with the extended interview with our special guest, Jacqueline Kent. So for in the meantime, wherever you are in this amazing, beautiful world of ours, I'm Janie Morris. I look forward to having your company again next on our next Shiro's Unlimited Behind the Book podcast. Hi, I'm Janie Morris, founder and chief experience officer at Boomer Babes Life. It's been our absolute pleasure having you listening in, tuning in to this latest podcast that we have created just for you. Gorgeous, amazing women over 50 around the world, because that's what Boom Babes Life community is all about. Everything that we do, everything that we create, we have you in mind. We want to bring to you valuable content that helps inspire you, starts making you think a little bit more, helps empower you, helps to give you ideas and information that can help you. So if you've enjoyed this episode, which I'm sure that you have, we would love you to help us share it with the world. So please share this, please like, and of course comment. Give us your feedback, send us all of your details, and let us know what you're thinking. And of course, if you've got any topics that you would like us to highlight in any of our podcasts, please let us know that as well. Just send an email to info@boomerbabeslife.com.au. And of course, check everything else out at our website, boomerbabeslife.com. Everything that you need to know, every tool, every video, every podcast. We've got a fabulous shop there that's got some brilliant inspirational books and audios for you as well. And of course, also at our website at boomerbabeslife.com, you'll find out how you can get your latest issue of our Boomer Babes Life magazine for women over 50. So once again, thank you so much for joining us, and wherever you are in this amazing world of ours, please have an absolutely fabulous day.